Hey, good morning, John. Good to see you.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, John. Good to have you back.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Good, thank you. And I hope you as well.
All right. Thank you.
Give everybody a couple more minutes. Last minute, grab your cup of coffee. Hey, John, good morning. We're going to get started. So I'm going to ask you to care to just close your eyes for a moment. A couple of deep breaths. And just allow yourself to become grounded and centered in the truth of who you are. You don't have to understand those words, but your heart understands them. I am grounded and centered in the truth that I am. And I am one with all beings. And I dedicate this time of growth, of healing, to the growth and healing of the world. And just sort of breathe that into your being. And before you open your eyes, just become aware of the rhythm of your breath. The rhythm of your heartbeat. Stretch a bit. Another deep breath. And opening your eyes when you're ready. Those of you who are following along with the book, we are on page 23. I took a quick look at the next couple of paragraphs, and they look pretty interesting. We'll see what develops. Heresy, you understand, is not claiming you are Christ. In other words, it's an untruth. Heresy is claiming you are the only one on the Christ, but you're not. I remember Ram Dass told this story about himself. His older brother was mentally ill. He was in a asylum, you might say. But when they had a lot of money, so it wasn't a poor place. And after one of his trips to India, he came back home, and he was wearing his saffron robes and his love beads, and he went to see his brother. And his brother was dressed in blue blazer, white duck trousers. Looked like he just stepped off a yacht. And he looks at his brother with the love beads and the saffron robes and the long hair, and he says, "What's wrong with this picture?" He said, "I only think that I'm the Christ." And Ram Dass said, "Yeah, but you think you're the only one." Could have wrote that a couple of sentences. "And we cannot be, because each of you are as well. All of you are as well, but unrealized. You are the Christ, but you are unrealized that you are the Christ. But unrealized, yet, because you have been so moored in the trenches and the gallows of the lower field, that you no longer look up at the sky and experience yourself in wonder." You could really kind of put that on your bathroom mirror. "You have been so moored." It's really interesting that the type of language they choose here. I've never heard them use this kind of language before. "You're so moored in the trenches and the gallows of lower field that you no longer look up at the sky and experience yourself in wonder. Yourself in wonder is correct. I am of that sky and of all things in that sky and of all that created the sky and the earth below me. I know myself as one with the source of my being. And as I know, I claim all things in agreement with this." And how easily we forget. Well, one of the things we do or are working on doing on Sunday morning is using this time to remember. Remember who you are. And if you forget, remember again. And if you forget, remember again. And if you forget, because you probably will. One of the things we've talked about consistently is that we go through periods of being awake, being aware, and being asleep, being unaware. And I do believe that's just part of our spiritual path. That's part of our learning, is that we're awake sometimes and we're asleep sometimes. The real learning comes about is when you have been unaware for a while. And I've spent weeks of my life sometimes, doing all the things I was supposed to be doing, even in my work, and then stop for a minute and say, "Well, where was I? I wasn't there. I mean, I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing, but I was not present to myself or the people I was working with." So once we become aware again of saying, "I could have had a V8, I could see this differently," instead of beating yourself up or falling asleep, it's about being grateful for being awake again. To me, that's the real lesson here. Not being angry at ourselves for being asleep, but being aware and rejoicing with ourselves for being awake again and again and again. And what we're going to find is that the length of time, which is a little bit arbitrary, the length of time we spend in unawareness, if we're grateful when we wake up, is going to be a little bit less or a little bit less intense, a little bit less, a little bit less. I can disappear, but I do believe that there will come a time in either this lifetime or another one where we will be completely and totally awake. I do believe that's true. But if I keep beating myself up for falling asleep, that's going to increase the time I'm going to be asleep. Because what I'm doing when I beat myself, I'm judging myself as doing something wrong. Whereas the reality is that it's very natural for me to go through a cycle of life, death, and rebirth. It's very simple and very real for me to go through a period of time where I'm asleep and then I'm awake. It's just part of the process. It's not bad. It's not evil. There's not something wrong with you. It's part of what you're doing, part of the process. In fact, everything is part of the process. It's all, as Ram Dass says, it's all grist for the mill. Why is this happening to me? It's part of the process. And I'm not trying to belittle that or make it seem, not caring. But there is a reality connected with that, that it is all part of the process. And as soon as I realize that it's all part of the process, I begin to realize that I chose this part of the path. I chose this particular piece of limitation, or I chose this particular piece of infirmity as being part of my lesson here. And then there's a really interesting conundrum here. Go back in Unity teaching and listen to what Myrtle Fillmore had to say about healing, where she kind of invented this mantra for herself. I am a divine child of God. I do not know illness. I do not inherit illness. And eventually, after doing that for probably a number of years, and concentrating on healing every cell in her body, she was healed of tuberculosis. Now, I have a question here. What would have happened if instead of her lesson being healing of that illness, that her lesson was learning how to deal with it? I do believe there's a flip side to every part of our lives. That yes, for some people, it might be healing or curing of that disease. On the other hand, it might be learning how to deal with it in a positive, loving kind of way. And I'm not sure, that might be different for different people. I'm not sure what might fit for you. I know when I'm working through something like that, what fits for me. Sometimes it's going to be I do not inherit illness. I'm a divine child of God. And other times, I am a divine child of God, and I have created this limitation so I could work my way through it lovingly. So there's not something wrong with me if it doesn't work. In fact, there might be something right with me if it doesn't work, because I'm not I'm maybe I'm pushing against something that I don't need to be pushing against. I don't know what the answer is for that for each one of us, but it might be different. But don't blame yourself for something that, let's suppose, I worked and I worked and I worked and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I visualized and I visualized and visualized to get rid of this illness. And maybe that's not the lesson. Maybe the lesson is not getting rid of the illness, but learning how to live with it. Just something I'm chewing on these days as I become a little bit older, or as my body becomes a little bit. Unrealized yet. Because you have been so moored in the trenches and the gallows of the lower field that you no longer look up at the sky and experience yourself in wonder. Yourself in wonder is correct. I am of that sky and of all things in that sky and of all that created the sky and the earth below me. I know myself as one with the source of my being. And as I know, I claim all things in agreement to this. That's just a beautiful, beautiful statement of truth. The path before some of you may feel arduous for a time. And one of the reasons why it feels arduous is because we're still working out of lower consciousness. My ego and my personality self, when is this going to be over? When is this going to end? When am I going to, when can I get the, when can I be in Oz? I'm tired of the Yellowbrook Road. I want this, oh, I want to be able to lie down in a hammock and sip lemonade. I want this to be done. When is it going to be? Whereas my soul goes, okay, what's next? Are we, we're not finished with this one yet. Okay, we have some more healing to do. As soon as we finish with the healing we need to do around this particular aspect of your life that you've chosen, right, we can move on to another one. But it never stops. You don't say, oh, I've reached the end. If it's true, which I believe it is, that one of the lessons of being here on planet Earth is to learn how to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. I need to ask myself is how much is enough unconditional love? Of course, for me, the answer is it's never going to be enough. I'm always going to be stretching and growing my capacity to hold everyone and everything in that unconditional love. So it's not like getting to the end point. It's being happy with the journey. The path before you may feel arduous for a time. Why am I dealing with this again? If you've ever grieved someone or something in your life, let's say that having personally having an illness or grieved the loss of a loved one, if you've ever had that kind of experience, you probably already know that there's initial part of the grieving process that hurts like hell, that takes some time to work through, and you go through all the different stages of denial and bargaining and anger and fear and depression and all those other good things until you finally come to a point of surrender or acceptance or letting go. And then you might become surprised after that release happens that maybe 6 months from then or a year from then, you start experiencing some of the same sadness, some of the same feelings that you might have had when you first broke through. And the first thing that happens to most people is that they start judging themselves. I must not have finished this correctly. I must not, because it's still here. Whereas the reality is that I've worked through a major level of my letting go, a major level of my grieving, and there's still more to do. Not something that's wrong with me, it's just there's more work to be done. And you will find probably that I will be doing that and doing that and doing that until there will come a time when I will touch the memory of that event or that person. And I might still feel sad about it, but I'm never going to be engulfed by it again. It's there. I accept it. I lovingly accept it as best I possibly can. And yet, here I am.
That was beautiful. I mean, I was engulfed in that grief. He had a hard childhood. And he, in my opinion, he was a very happy man. And last Sunday, I put his name on the prayer list. And I asked for peace. It was slipped it off me. I still think of him. But I'm not engulfed in that grief. So his peace brought me peace.
Thank you for that. The sadness remains sometimes, and sometimes it lasts for as long as we last. But it doesn't take us over. It's just an aspect of our life. You say goodbye, I say hello.
Did he have to take
her?
I was not functioning. It was a miracle. It really was for me.
And sometimes we will grieve for somebody else in a way. And sometimes we will be, I wouldn't say necessarily happy with that, but at peace with that. Yeah, let me just.
These two sentences in this last paragraph just really hit me. After probably a couple months of this last election, I would go out and walk and think, oh my God, I just cannot go through this again because it seems like I had a birthday the other day, seven, I was 76, but 7, 6, 7 years, it's just like we do the same thing over. We go 2 to 3 steps up to get back. Not back that. And it was just like, when does it ever stop? What if we ever keep stop killing one another, bombing each other? And I'm thinking, I'm one person, I can only do so much. I think I've done that. And I wasn't near the suicide area, but I was angry, I was depressed. And I thought, if I went to the doctor the next couple of weeks and I was told I had a terminal illness and lived 6 weeks, it'd thrill me to death because I think then I don't have to do it to myself. So as time went on, I tried to be a little bit more positive. And things only got worse. I mean, what was going on in the world. So the only thing I've been able to do satisfy myself for the moment is that I've told myself, look, you're stronger than this, and you made an agreement that you were going to come through this plane called Planet World or whatever, and you chose your time. So this is the time you're coming through, and there are lessons to learn, and just give me the strength to stay in there. So that's where I am. So when I read this, I thought, here I am. Wow, how many times I feel like I've gotten the lesson. And maybe the other people who weren't getting on the bus haven't, but I feel like I got that. I don't. I want to go on to another thing. Yeah,
Right.
let me learn another thing. I've got this. I think.
I got it. It's reminiscent too of another Ram Dass story, where he said, I'm going to give you a parable. Let's suppose that I was taking students. I'm not really, but let's suppose I was taking students. Somebody came up to me after a workshop and said, I want to be one of your students. And he said, because I can't stand living in New York, I want to be in California where you live. And he said, I will accept you as a student with one stipulation, that you stay in New York. Because New York is not doing anything to you. New York is just being New York. You're letting it do to you whatever it is you choose to. And so that doesn't mean that automatically you're free all of a sudden, but you're exactly in the place you're talking about, right? Where I'm accepting where I am and not looking at it as being helpless and hopeless, but I am doing the best I can, best I possibly can under the circumstances with the information that I have right now. And I am a little bit, with that realization, I am a little bit freer than I was a couple of minutes ago. Not perfect, not yet, but I am a little bit freer. I am a little bit less sucked in to negativity. I don't know, but sometimes that's the best I can do as well. The path before some of you may feel arduous for a time. Why am I dealing with this again? Basically, because I'm not finished with it yet. It's not finished with me yet. Why am I fighting that battle yet again? The guide's answer. Everything is an opportunity to learn. And there are things that you've ignored and said, I will get to that someday. It's a little bit too big. I'll get to working on this. I'll get to work on loving this person someday. I can't do it right now. Spirit might say, yes, you can do it right now. You don't feel like doing it right now, but you can if you choose. I will get to that someday. And then chosen to ignore your own statement. You are letting it lie in the wayside. You're letting it lie in the wayside requires you to claim it and offer it again. The offering that you made in this teaching already, the personality structure brought to a higher use, aligned to source, does not dismantle personality as much as it reclaims it. And the aspects of self that you require and encounter with are about to be seen. Course in Miracles suggests, how can I see this differently? I don't know. Each one of us is probably going to have a different answer to that question. But that, to me, that's a major stipulation in our growth and our healing. I know how I'm seeing it right now, and it's eaten my lunch. And the longer I hold it this particular way, the more lunches it's going to eat on me. How can I see this differently? Or another piece from the Course, I could see peace instead of this. And of course, my little self, my little controlling personality, ego consciousness, goes apeshit when I say that. Because it doesn't, first of all, it doesn't believe it. Secondly, it doesn't want to believe it. It would much rather be in struggle, be in hardship, be in being right, as opposed to being with it and being loving. I would rather be right than be loving. Really? No, not really, but we touched on this in our Tuesday class, and I might follow up on this some other time. How sometimes, I won't say this is true for all human beings, because I'm sure it's not, but some of us seem to be attracted to the negative side of things. It's kind of like it's much easier for me to be angry than to be at peace, especially when there's certain people I think about. And somehow or another, I am drawn to that sense of negativity, limitation. And I really don't know why that's true, but I know it is true for a lot of us. We, like I said, we might explore that sometime. Why it seems that I'm drawn to that side rather than the you might say the more positive side. Sangi?
So then I can pat myself if I did something right.
Okay. I'm good at it. The reason why I'm drawn to the negativity is I'm really good at doing that, right? I'm really good at feeling crappy, right? I'm really good at being depressed. I'm really good at being angry. That's a great answer. Thank you for that.
Gary?
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, I'm. This is so intriguing when I really go even deeper, just quickly went a little deeper. We do seem to be more attracted to a fast-paced energy type of thing. And wonder if our lessons are to, like, how many of us can really remain in that really peaceful, calm motion. Like when I'm thinking of vibrational motion, when there's a lot more stimulus in something that's rooted in upheaval. And we gravitate to it in our thought and whatever. It is kind of, it's very intriguing. It seems like that's part of the root of what we're trying to really understand within us, why we cannot be in that peace of calm and quietness more than the act more activity energetically.
Okay. One thing. The distinction that we are not making is the distinction between my lower consciousness, my small self, and my divine consciousness, my higher self. My lower self is always going to be drawn to the more negative limitation, judgmental side of things. That's just its nature. My divine consciousness, my higher self, is always going to be drawn. Well, not even being drawn, it identifies itself, not drawn to it, but it identifies itself with truth, with harmony, with unconditional love, with lack of judgment, with lack of fear, with all those other good things. So depending upon what space I am living in is going to make one thing easier or not. So if I'm living in a state of higher consciousness, not only is it not going to be easy for me to embrace negativity, I can embrace negativity because it doesn't live there. When I'm living in lower consciousness or my ego, my personality consciousness, of course it's going to be easy for me to be drawn to negativity because that's where it lives. It lives in judgment. It lives in fear. It lives in limitation. So of course I'm going to be drawn to it because that's how it defines itself. And as Sangi pointed out, not even the flip side of things, but I'm really good at that. I'm really good at living in my or identifying with my personality, ego, consciousness. I'm good at it. And so I'm drawn to that because I am good at it. But again, to make it into more of a choice rather than something that we just get sucked into. My choice every moment when I am awake enough is where awareness comes in again. My choice when I am awake enough is to choose higher consciousness or lower consciousness. Lower consciousness, even in that moment of choice, can be rather seductive. It can say, hey, we're really good at holding on to anger, we're really good at being fearful, we're really good at vengeance, we're really good at that. And so it's still going to be there. Is going to influence my choice. And the other side is, which we're not used to claiming, the other side, the higher, I am a divine child of God, which I am not, I claim that maybe quite often, but I'm not used to really doing that. It's a new, sort of a new twist on things. But when I claim that as being my truth, right, I am living in a higher state of consciousness, and it becomes, I won't say it becomes easier, it becomes smoother. It becomes more natural. It becomes more natural for me to choose higher consciousness than lower consciousness. But I got to be awake enough and aware enough to be able to do that. Yeah, Sangi?
Well, it becomes natural. Like, when I have the moment where I can make a choice and say I choose the light, what waits for me is nothing. It's empty. Because it hasn't yet been that. So I have a choice, and there could be something or nothing. So my mind gravitates towards the choice.
Okay.
Right, because right now I'm like, oh, let me have the light, let me see God. It's just abstract, isn't it? There's no embodied sense there.
Oh, now.
So how do I change? Or how do
if I might interrupt, I do believe that there is a way of sensing that, of being aware of that. It's that simple adage that we've came up with in a couple of years ago that I feel very blessed in this one particular teaching. You can put it on my gravestone. Does what I am thinking about, this action that I am planning on doing, or this thought that I'm holding on to, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? And I have come to a point, and this is not just maybe a result of my thinking about that, of being aware of, I know how that feels. I know how that feels, not emotionally necessarily, but I know how that feels in my body. I mean, I can be walking along, having a grand old time talking to somebody that I love and somebody I care about, and then have this stray thought of limitation or anger or fear. Bam. I can feel my heart shutting down, literally. And then after it shuts down, Then I sort of walk through life forgetting that my heart shut. So everything, I wonder how come everything I'm seeing right now is negative. I wonder why I'm so angry. I wonder why I'm so grieving. I wonder why I'm so hurt. I wonder why I'm so whatever this limitation might be holding on to me. That's because my heart shut down. Once the door slams, it's going to be hard to realize that I can feel it in a split second. But once the door slams, it's going to be difficult for me to remember the door is closed until I come across something. Do I really want to feel this way? Let's suppose I start thinking about someone I love or someone I care about. Do I really want to feel angry? Do I really want to feel vengeful? Do I really want to feel fearful? Do I really want to feel a negativity connected with my relationship with this person? And once I raise it to the level of thought, the choice raised to the level of thought, then I have that choice again. I'm saying, no, I don't. I choose to love. I choose to care. I choose to be open to oneness as much as I possibly can in this moment in time.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, my audio wasn't working. I'm glad you hear me. Yeah, man, I love that, man. What you just shared, you said, and I think you said this a couple gatherings ago. When I'm willing to pause, just pause and just take a quick breath. And asking myself in terms of what you just shared, because I do that, I've been doing that myself. Does this open my heart? Does this close my heart? And then what I and then I've had this thing to what I'm doing is, in other words, what I'm about to say, what I want that said about me, or what I'm thinking, what I want that thought about me. And so that's where I go with that, and it's oftentimes I think it could be easy to rationalize this, but it's like, the ego, the lower consciousness wants to try and do that, but I love how you just keep it very, very simple, because simplicity is that in terms of, okay, does it, because I guess I know, is this opening or closing my heart, and what's next? Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you. I'd like you to just all notice something, whether you're here in person or online. Just for a second, notice the energy in the space you're in right now. And how different that is from where you might have been 10 minutes ago. We were really struggling about 10 minutes ago to get this right or to do it right or let go of this or let go of that. But as we listened to one another, as we became more aware of what it's like to have an open heart as opposed to having a closed heart, we created a space where there was no judgment, where there was no fear. We just are. And we could not have done that without one another. Isn't that cool? That's why I'm here. That's why you're here. Now, if you perceive this as a gift, the guides keep shifting gears here, okay? They're kind of upping the ante every paragraph. If you perceive this as a gift, you'll encounter many things very quickly and move into a higher way of experiencing yourself. Move into a higher way of experiencing yourself. If you keep trying to push things back into the darkened room where they just escaped, you'll have a battle before you. There are aspects of all of you forged in pain, disassociated from your true natures, that require sight and response and realignment. In other words, I'm not finished yet. There's stuff I need to work on and allow to be worked on. You will say this if you wish. On this day, And you can say this to yourself as well. On this day, I choose to allow every aspect of myself that requires sight to be seen in loving ways. I give myself permission to see all things so that they may be made new in equivalency, in truth, in the high light of the upper room. I choose to see everything as being a lesson to learn, as being a loving act to be healed, as to be a piece of guidance, piece of love, piece of challenge, piece of truth. On this day, I choose to allow every aspect of myself that requires sight to be seen in loving ways. I give myself permission to see all things so that they may be made new in equivalency, in truth, in the high light of the upper room. When you agree to this, you support the process you are engaging in now. So every time you come walking in here or press the right buttons on Sunday morning, you're saying to yourself and to those of us who are here, I am willing to stretch. I am willing to grow. I am willing to become a little bit more, or maybe a lot more, of the truth of who I am. So that kind of gives us a good spot to our meditation. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. Allow yourself to be comfortable in the place where you are. And just breathe deeply. Close your eyes. Back to the rhythm of your breathing again, beating of your heart. And noticing what it is like to have an open heart in this moment. And how that open heart affects you. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And take that in. And hear these words and the meaning behind the words. I love you with an everlasting love. There is nothing that you could say or do or experience that could separate you from my love. And what would it be like to spend a little bit of time every day to simply rest in that love? I am whole. I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall go from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
A
Thank you,
wonderful day.
guys. Wonderful
Thanks for
week.
being
Thanks,
here.
Jerry.
Thank you, guys. Peace and blessings.
Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome.